Today's program has been brought to you by Kane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit Kane5.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food here on the Heritage Radio Network with me, Erica Weitz. So you know what I haven't talked about in a long time? Little House on the Prairie. Oh, my favorite subject. I think maybe I haven't talked about it since I told you the story of my imaginary ongoing childhood conversation with Laura Ingalls, which I believe I regaled you with in my show about waffles and pancakes that I did a couple months ago when I did a show about waffles and pancakes and maple syrup. Remember I told you about that? I used to keep a running conversation with Laura Ingalls going in my head where I would explain to her all the marvels and wonders of modern 1970s American life. Remember that? But Little House on the Prairie, which is a very common recurring theme on this show since the beginning, hasn't come up in a while other than that. Even though it was the single greatest influence on me and my thoughts and feelings about food in my youth, but from the books mostly. Also the TV show, but the books were primary. Luckily, I read all the books way before the TV show actually hit the airwaves. Otherwise, me and every other colonial era fangirl would have grown up thinking that people in 1870s America were all really clean and really healthy looking and that their houses had great lighting and everyone had perfect teeth, or even just their teeth for that matter. Luckily, the books told it more like it really was. Plagues of grasshoppers, crop failure, death by pneumonia, having to eat rancid bear fat, having no food at all, stuff like that. The show was too pretty for reality. The books told it like it was. On the show, everybody was attractive and had no disfiguring smallpox scars or had any amputations done during the Civil War with a saw and cauterized with hot tar. I mean, the only bummer on the show was when Mary went blind, but Mary was so uninteresting to me that I didn't really care that she went blind. I only cared about Laura and about Pa. Laura, because she was my pretend BFF doppelganger, she was a messy, non-girly girl who liked to play in the mud and fish in the creek and run around and not sit quietly with the other girls and their dolls like Mary always did. And Pa, because he was so good-looking and generous and rugged, and in the books, he used to let Laura help with all the hard, messy boy work, like butchering and building. And in the show, because he was played by Michael Landon, who was one of Hollywood's only swarthy, rugged, outdoorsy Jews. From Bonanza to Walnut Grove, Pa drove those mules and rode those horses and plowed and worked in the sawmill, still seemed to keep Ma happy and satisfied. All with a twinkle in his eye and those thick, brown, grown-up bar mitzvah boy on the prairie curls of his. Now, my favorite image of Pa Ingalls is this one. I have many, but it's this one. It's this occasional scene from the show where they would show Ma and Pa, Charles and Caroline, to you, late at night in bed. Now, relax. The show was all family-friendly. It was G-rated. They had on their standard sexy colonial era nightshirts and sleeping caps all covered up, and the bedside oil lamp would always be on, but they would be talking in bed, all cozy and intimate, while Pa snacked on a big bowl of popcorn. Now, that part is actually accurate because popcorn's been eaten in North America since ancient times. The earliest explorers to the New World from Europe reported seeing Native Americans and Aztecs popping corn in the fire and eating it and using it in religious ritual and decoratively. So that part of the picture was just fine. It was actually pretty accurate. Popcorn's been made, grown, and eaten in this part of the world for millennia. Now, whether Ma and Pa Ingalls stayed up at night eating it in bed and talking is another story, the accuracy of that. But who cares if they really did or didn't? Because what got me all titillated by the scene as a kid wasn't that they were in bed, but that they were eating in bed. Who ate in bed? Who was allowed to eat in bed? I mean, other than like a yearly botched attempt at making breakfast in bed for Mother's Day, which never really went very well. Who was allowed to bring bowls of crunchy, salty snacks into their bed at night? I mean, maybe now, in the era of a TV in every room and the apparent insatiable need and requirement by all children to be fed snacks continuously throughout the day and night, lest they all starve. But back then, hell no. That and the fact that they also seemed to really enjoy each other's company and could talk and giggle so intimately in bed while they ate their popcorn. It was all so cozy and so sweet and so unlike my home life at the time. But the popcorn is what stuck with me. Imagine, I used to think to myself, the family would eat their dinner, you know, bear stew and cornmeal mush, maybe have dessert, I don't know what, a dried apple. Then they'd clean up. Then they'd sit around the fire in the evening and they would read or sew or listen to Pa play his fiddle. Then they'd get into bed and go to sleep. At least the kids did. And then Pa would say, "You know what, Caroline? I feel like some popcorn." And then he'd get up out of bed without central heating, mind you. This was, you know, fireplace only. Get out of bed, stoke the fire back up in the cook stove or the fireplace and pop some corn, then get back into bed and eat it, risking getting popcorn in the bed in a house that probably already had multiple vermin infestations and probably mice. It was a wooden house on the prairie in the 19th century, after all. Now, didn't Ma say, "Charles, put that popcorn down and come and give me a son right now. Enough with all the daughters. It's bad enough that one of them's blind and one has freckles and buck teeth. Pay attention to me." But the popcorn obsessed me. There was something so casual and so comfortable about the way they ate it in bed. It's probably why I wanted to live in their world and not mine, because in their world, you got to ride in wagons pulled by horses and you didn't have to play volleyball in gym class and you could eat popcorn in bed. The popcorn stayed with me years after the show was canceled and Melissa Gilbert fixed her nose, and years after Michael Landon's decades and decades of smoking finally did him in, Baruch Hashem. The popcorn stayed. So tonight on Let's Get Real, I want to talk about popcorn because it's my favorite snack. And while it has gone down the foodiness rabbit hole somewhat, it's still redeemable. We can still pull it back. And it's easy and cheap, and it's actually very good for you. And if you know what to buy and how to make it, and I don't mean in the microwave, popcorn is great. So stick around, because the popcorn show will continue right after this short break.
This is Chris Howell from Cane Vineyard and Winery, calling in from Spring Mountain above the Napa Valley. Thank you for listening to this show. In our industrial world of highly processed food and wine, we support the values of Heritage Radio Network. All of us at Cane encourage you to seek out individuality and beauty in everything you eat and drink. To learn more about us, go to cane5.com.
Today's break song is called 4 of 7 by me, Jack Inslee. You're listening to Let's Get Real.
Welcome back to Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food here on Heritage Radio Network with me, Erica Weitz, your host. And tonight, we are talking about popcorn. Now, I eat a lot of popcorn, and apparently, Jack Inslee, engineer, does too. He just stuck his head in to tell me that. I eat a lot, kind of a crazy lot of popcorn. At night, while I'm watching TV, and in the afternoons, when I'm writing, I eat it. It actually helps me concentrate, believe it or not. That's what I tell myself. Because I generally try to keep my refined carb intake very, very low. Like, there are days where, you know, the only carbs I eat is my bowl of quinoa in the morning. But sometimes I need something carby in the afternoon just to kind of get my blood sugar back up and to get my brain working again. I need a little glucose. Popcorn is perfect for that because it's a true whole grain. You are popping and eating the whole intact kernel. That's what makes it a whole grain. No bullshit foodiness, whole graininess. It's the real deal. It's the whole grain. You pop it, you're still eating the whole thing. Now, there are plenty of foodiness faux whole grain products out there, but they're made from processed flours with the bran or the fiber added back in, potentially not even from that actual milled grain. It could be from some other batch. They just mix it back together in a certain proportion, and then it's called whole grain. And then it can be labeled a whole grain product. Now, not that I would eat products anyway. I try not to eat products, but the whole grain label is a total scam. We've been over this before. I've done episodes on this. But popcorn is truly a whole grain product, and it's a perfectly simple, perfect food. Because not only do you get a big pile of tasty, crunchy food with very low caloric density, but you also get a boatload of fiber from the corn hull and the bran, and yellow corn is packed with beta carotene. It's a win-win-win, as they say. You shouldn't eat the white corn. You don't get any beta carotene. Eat the yellow corn. Now, I buy bulk organic yellow popping corn at my local health food store in Brooklyn Heights. And it's $1.79 a pound. A pound. $1.79 a pound. What else is $1.79 a pound in your life these days? Do you know how much popcorn you can make from a pound of whole kernels? So don't try to tell me that organic food is too expensive, because ounce for ounce, the organic is 11 cents. Per ounce. And 2 tablespoons of raw popcorn, which is about an ounce, makes about 8 cups of popped corn. So you're looking at 11 cents for 8 cups of popcorn plus a tablespoon of oil. You go into a store, a so-called healthy food store, you buy a bag, let's say, of pre-popped organic popcorn. What are you going to pay, Jack? $2.69? $3.29? Yeah, something like that. You're getting ripped off. It's foodiness scam. 11 cents. Times are tough, people. So I buy my bulk organic yellow popping corn, and I pop it in something called a Whirly Pop. Now, the Whirly Pop is a stovetop popcorn popper. It's like a pot with a crank at the end of the handle, and the crank turns an arm inside, and it keeps the corn moving so it doesn't burn. It's a truly fantastic invention. It makes the best popcorn imho. I've popped in a pot, too. I've popped in a cast iron pan. I've popped in everything. And they all work just fine, but you have to keep shaking them. And I'm not one to buy a device for a single use, like as Alton Brown would say, a unitasker. Not me. But if I were to ever endorse a product, it would be the Whirly Pop. Just saying, Whirly Pop people, you listening? I have 2 of them. I keep one at each house so that I'm never caught without my popcorn on any random summer or winter evening. And one of them I got at the Goodwill, completely unused, still in the box for $10. So that's thriftiness and foodiness fighting all in one. That's multitasking. Now, popping methods for popcorn have evolved over the years from the ancient times where they would just throw the whole kernels into the fire or bury them in hot sand, which I thought was very interesting. From in our era, of course, to, you know, the yellow plastic domed countertop poppers of the 60s and 70s. They were kind of groovy looking. To Jiffy Pop, the foil package you would put on the stove, which never really worked or puffed very well, and it always burned the popcorn. And I don't really want to cook in anything plastic, so those old school dome poppers are no good for me anyway. And, you know, the Ingalls, Charles Ingalls, when he got up out of bed, he would pop his over the fireplace, probably in sort of a cast iron gizmo. We had one of those fireplace things, too, back on the Long Island suburban prairie where I grew up. And it was kind of fun, but it always burnt the corn, too. Sort of more of a novelty. Then, of course, along came the fat phobia of the 80s and 90s. And the hot air popper came along. Remember those, the hot air poppers? We had one of those, too. Which is hard to believe because we never bought anything, but we had one of those, too. Now, air-popped popcorn sucks ass. It's dry, it's tough, it tastes bad. They suck. They have no use. Air popped, no good. Fat phobia, no good. Those air poppers, luckily, have now found second lives as home coffee roasting machines for hipsters. So good riddance, but goodbye. Let's please finally close the coffin and pound in the last nail on the fat phobia, okay? Because you need fat to make food, and when you make popcorn, you need to cook it in some fat, and air popping stinks. But then what comes along? Along comes the microwave popcorn, which was a little pile of popcorn congealed in a solid mass of evil synthetic trans fats. You know, the artificially hydrogenated vegetable oils, there would be like a brick of it in the pouch with the corn embedded in it. That's the stuff that really causes heart disease. Not the good fat, not the oils, not the butter. And the corn came in that along with sugar and flavorings and artificial butter flavor and all of that. That's the shit that causes disease. Of course, along with processed flours and sugars and things like that. Now, the microwave stuff also, of course, is heavily dosed with artificial flavors and colors because you can't put like real butter in there or any of the seasonings that people like on their popcorn, like me. I like to cover mine in smoked pimenton. And it also came inside a plastic-lined paper pouch. And the plastic was microwavable plastic, which we know is just a hot mess of toxins. And the paper, which is bleached with dioxin and all kinds of other terrible stuff. But microwave popcorn sure was easy compared with doing something on top of the stove or compared with the noise in the space of an air popper. But ew, who wants to eat that? Who would eat all that chemical shit? Now, in the microwave mad 80s, when moms went back to work in record numbers and kids were home alone and everybody got a VCR and movie attendance started to drop, those pouches of microwave popcorn became the best sellers because suddenly it was movie night at home and, oh, mom's not here. And how do we make popcorn? Oh, in the microwave. You don't have to use the stove. And then, of course, we lost the knowledge. Like everything else, we lose the knowledge and we lose the tradition and everybody forgot how to actually pop popcorn, and they just stuck it in the microwave. Now, when I was still teaching at the culinary school, I once had popcorn on a menu for an event that we were doing, like a bar snack or something. And I would say 90-something percent of my students were absolutely stumped as to how to make it when I told them to go make the popcorn. They couldn't conceptualize of how to make it outside of the microwave, but these were also the students who used to ask me where the lemon juice was. And I had to say, it's in the lemons. That's why I don't teach anymore. But there's more evil foodiness fright associated with microwave popcorn than just the trans fats and the nasty flavors. The people who work in microwave popcorn factories die from a disease called popcorn lung, which is caused by inhaling the chemicals used to create the fake butter flavors, the diacetyl. It basically gives them lung cancer. And the plastic that lines the paper pouches emits PFOA, which is a toxin that's released when the pouch is heated. So here, let's listen to this. It's some science talk stuff about this scary stuff. One toxic ingredient typically found in microwave popcorn is 2,3-pentanedione. I can't pronounce that. PD. Responsible for the artificial buttery flavor and aroma. Now, according to research published in the American Journal of Pathology, PD is a, quote, respiratory hazard that can also alter gene expression in the brain. This means that PD is toxic to the lungs and may cause genetic changes in the brain. Diacetyl, another chemical found in artificial microwave popcorn butter flavorings, has been linked to a severe lung disease called bronchiolitis obliterans, also known as popcorn lung. Research studies show that microwave butter flavoring products generate concentrations of diacetyl in the air great enough to endanger those exposed. Symptoms include wheezing, dry cough, fatigue, and shortness of breath. The condition that can result from eating artificial microwave popcorn can result in and require a lung transplant or even be fatal. Even more toxins can be found in the waxy coating of the typical microwave popcorn bag, including the chemical PFOA, which has been found to accumulate in the blood of humans as well as wildlife worldwide. Great. In 2011, the FDA asked companies to voluntarily stop using PFOA in microwavable bags, but a full phase-out will not occur until 2015. A major source of human PFOA exposure is through the consumption and metabolism of fluoroalkyl phosphate, PAPs, used as greaseproofing agents on paper food packaging, e.g. fast food wrappers and microwave popcorn bags. These PAPs seep into the popcorn during microwaving and could affect your blood platelets, which could contribute to blood clotting. Think about that. We're going to take another short break. Welcome back to Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food on Heritage Radio Network with me, Erica Watts, your host. So I bet you never heard this on Little House on the Prairie. Charles, hitch up the team to the wagon. We need to go into Walnut Grove to the Mercantile to get more boxes of microwave popcorn and some whale oil for the lamp. And while we're there, let's get a few yards of calico, and I need a new sewing needle. Now, don't tell me you're too busy to pop your own popcorn. Do you know how much work it was to live on the prairie? To have a farm and a house and horses and oxen and three little girls, one blind and totally useless, and no electricity and no running water and no internet, and they still found the time to make their own popcorn at night. Probably because they had no internet. Now, until Jiffy Pop came along in its cool puffing foil dome pack that never really worked, we bought our popcorn in a jar or in a bag, unpopped, at the supermarket. That was it. Oh, there were bags of pre-popped popcorn sold in the snack aisle and dyed bright yellow so we would think buttery, but it was never as good as home-popped. Then Smart Food came along, that evil white cheddar-flavored popcorn, which I ate like crack in college until I realized just how caloric it actually was. But popcorn for home popping was either the bag or the jar of Jolly Time brand until the microwave. And of course, right on schedule, there are foodiness brands of microwave popcorn, like organic microwave popcorn from Paul Newman's brand, Newman's Own. Are they kidding? Seriously, people, it is so freaking easy to make your own and so much cheaper. I never thought that Newman's Own would go there, but they have. It's a good thing old Pops Newman is dead, because I'm not so sure he'd be actually happy about that one. It's so simple, a child could do. Well, I don't know if I would let a kid near the stove. Well, I went near the stove. I came out okay. I didn't get hurt. And I could hardly reach the stove because I'm so short. Now, finally, tonight, in my tirade and rant against popcorn foodiness, I bring you the Popcorner. Have you seen these? I first encountered the Popcorner a few years ago when they were handed to me as a snack on a JetBlue flight. I like JetBlue, generally, but don't give me that. They used to give blue potato chips. They were so much better. I guess they got too expensive. Now, Popcorners are a snack in a bag. It's like a sort of a chip, but they're supposed to seem sort of like it's popcorn in a pressed into a triangular chip form in a way. It's very deceptive because you think it's popcorn. Now, pop chips are a total foodiness freakout fakery. They purport to be popcorn in a chip form, like I said. Popcorn with corners, since they're triangular. And they're trying to capitalize on popcorn's wholesome, whole grain, healthy image. But you know what? Popcorners aren't made from popcorn. They're made from corn. That's a big difference. Popcorn is a totally different species of the corn grown in this country. Popcorn is a completely separate thing from the corn grown for industrial use in snacks and cornstarch and cereals and corn syrup. That's field corn or dent corn. That's industrially grown, GMO, horribly maligned, chemically doused corn. Popcorn's different. Field corn, dent corn, was originally grown for animal consumption. It's not even designed for people. Popcorn is a totally different animal. It's more like sweet corn, but it's allowed to dry on the cob into its hard, dehydrated state. Now, popcorners are just made from that same old slurry of industrial corn and salt and sugar and industrial oils, just like, you know, cheese doodles and Cheetos and Dorito, like all of that stuff, and cornstarch and corn syrup and all of that industrial stuff. It's all that same slurry of corn. The first ingredient in popcorners is enriched yellow corn. So people see that and they go, oh, that's good. Enriched yellow corn. That's healthy. That means cornmeal or corn flour. It doesn't mean popcorn. Popcorn doesn't have to be enriched because it hasn't been processed. It hasn't been stripped of its brand and ground to dust and turned into pure starch and sugar like processed corn flour. When you process a grain into a flour like that and you strip away the bran, the government requires you to enrich it back with the minerals and the vitamins and the things that you stripped out by processing it. So popcorners conflate themselves with popcorn by emulating the texture of popcorn and putting the word pop in there, but you're just getting the same old processed industrial commodity foodiness crap. Shaped in a triangle and flavored like popcorn, but no fiber, none of the beta carotene, a few synthetic vitamins and minerals added back in to compensate for the corn's processing, because as I said, that's what enriched is all about. It's a total foodiness sham worthy of a golden uncrustable award at our next ceremony. And let's talk about cost, shall we? Yet again. On Amazon, the source for all things and all information, the average discount cost on Amazon for bags of popcorners comes out to 52 cents an ounce. That's the Amazon discount, not the retail price, which is usually, what, 30% higher? Versus how much for the organic bulk popcorn? How much was that? Do we remember from earlier class? Anybody remember? Yes, 11 cents an ounce for real organic food that you make yourself and you don't eat from a Mylar or a plastic bag that's non-recyclable and create even more waste on our planet to ultimately bury our obese diabetic corpses in. Now, last week I was in Chicago for the IACP convention and I visited the test kitchen and lab at Modo Restaurant. Very kind of crazy, high-end, modernist cuisine place. And while we were in the test kitchen, they let us taste their edible packing peanuts, which look just like real styrofoam packing peanuts, but guess what they're made out of? Cornstarch and sugar. Kind of a cool idea, not very delicious, not really sure what the use is, but okay, at least they're trying. So maybe as we all die too young from heart disease and obesity and diabetes and cancer from eating popcorners, we can just pack ourselves into boxes filled with synthetic edible packing popcorn and just ship our sorry fat selves into space. And then we can float around the universe for eternity, snacking on our own packing material forever. So, if you do want to eat real popcorn and you don't want to eat foodiness, fake out, faux popcorn flavored foolishness, and you really, really don't want to spend eternity floating in a box full of edible packing peanuts and popcorn, then by all means, keep on listening to Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food here on Heritage Radio with me, Erica Wides. And if you can't get enough of just listening to this every week, now you can read my column, my blog on the Huffington Post. Just go to Huffington Post, put in my name, it's in the food section, and there you go. I'm now a Huffington Post blogger, so there's even more of me out there. And remember, you can listen to all Heritage Radio shows ever on heritageradionetwork.org or on iTunes. You can also check out my website, letsgetrealshow.com. And please follow me on Twitter at Let's Get Real Show or find the show on Facebook and become a friend or a fan or family, whatever. Thanks to Jack in the control room today and to Ben Kaplan for writing my theme song. And we'll see you next week.